This is HPR episode 2764 entitled, Personal Password Algorithms, and is part of the series, Information Underground. It is hosted by Klaatu, and is about 41 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is it possible to generate a unique password for every site? Klaatu tries.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. I want to talk about passwords. Passwords are funny things because we're all stuck with them. We have to have a bunch of passwords almost no matter what. Whether we like it or not, we need to have lots of passwords. Now, there have been stabs out there at making passwords in some way a little bit more unified. So for instance, OpenID, that sort of thing, where you can have a centralized server that does the authentication for you. And that's great. That's really cool. And there are really great things like two-factor authentication where you can't get in unless you have some number generator on you or some way to receive a message or something like that. So that's really cool. But not everyone is using that sort of thing. And I don't mean like people. I mean places. For instance, you couldn't sign up for half a dozen sites out there if you said, oh, I'm only going to use things that will accept OpenID or two-factor authentication or both or whatever. It just wouldn't be a thing that you could do because not everyone is doing that. And frankly, probably not everyone needs to do that. There are some things out there that are fairly trivial in terms of what kind of information they actually have on the server. So if accounts got compromised, then maybe sure some preferences will get changed on you or something, but there's no expectation that privacy is lost from a compromised account. There are low level things like that out there that you just don't need a whole lot of a big complex backend for, but you still want to have some kind of password so that people can customize their experience maybe or whatever. I'm just coming up with examples off the top of my head. So passwords, generally speaking, you're going to have a bunch of different ones, and you're going to have to keep them organized. And we all know that there are methods out there of keeping them sort of organized. You know, there's things like LastPass and KeyPass and OnePass, lots of things that end with pass, I guess. I've never used any of those things, actually, because I've never felt the need to. But those are out there. They exist. People use them. People seem pretty happy with them. I've never used them because I'm always afraid that I'm not going to have the thing that I need when I need it. And so I think, well, what if the computer that I'm on doesn't have access to, you know, KeyPass or LastPass or whatever the thing might be? So I've got methods of managing passwords, but I was sitting around thinking, well, wouldn't it be neat if there were methods that we could come up with, possibly more than just me. Like, if you're listening to this and you have ideas on this, I would love to hear an episode about it. But methods to create, or to systems to by which you can create a unique password for any site that you go to, but also that you can then remember, that you know how to formulate. So in other words, a private algorithm that you use to generate what may as well be unique passwords for every site. And that would mean that if someone had compromised one site with your information, they have gotten a password that is specific to that site. Now, the problem is when you come up with these with an algorithm, or you attempt to come up with an algorithm, I have found, for a website or for a password schema, I guess I should say, is that you start to realize just how easily, in theory, you know, theoretically, how easily all of these things are reverse engineered. I mean, algorithms themselves. So, for instance, let's say that you decided, I mean, just taking really a poor example here, let's say that you've decided that you're going to you've signed up for Yahoo.com and you decide, well, I'm going to use my standardized algorithm, and that algorithm is going to be that I'll take Yahoo, the name of the site, which is Yahoo, and I will apply a ROT 2 to it. That's just so it's super easy for us to think about. So ROT 2 would dictate that we move each letter over two slots. So Y Z A, and then A B C H I J, 0 or O Q O Q. So your password would be A C J Q Q. Well, if someone gets that password, they compromise your password, they get that, then because you've used this really poor algorithm for just Yahoo, then technically they've only gotten the password for just your Yahoo account. But if they're tracking you specifically and they're actually following up on you, they might recognize ACJQQ as a simple ROT encryption. If we even call it, it's really a cipher, I guess, right? A Caesar cipher, classically. So they might recognize that and say, well, if they're using that for Yahoo, then maybe they're also using that for their, I don't know, Facebook account. Why are they on Facebook still? I don't know. And then they see Facebook, and so they type in H-C-E-G-D-Q-Q-M, and sure enough, that's your algorithm. That's the thing that you've been using, and so that cracks it wide open. And you can, the weird thing about this sort of thing is that you can go through and really attempt to come up with algorithms that to you seem very random, but the more you do it, the more you realize, oh, this is exactly, it's very predictable. And that's the tough thing about coming up with algorithms. I mean, for instance, so let's say if you said the Yahoo example again, right? So you said Yahoo is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a 5-letter word, right? So let's say we're going to say, okay, so our password is always going to be ROT2 and then a dash, and then we'll put we'll put the number of letters that is in the website, Yahoo. Or we could even say, okay, it's going to be Yahoo.com. It doesn't really matter, right? Because it's always going to be basically the same, but sometimes it would be different. So we could say Yahoo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, .6, and then COM. So that's 9. And then we could say, and then we'll put the letter position of the third letter in. So AC, or let's, for ease of use, let's say the second letter in. And so we'll say AC, so that's the third letter of the alphabet. So we'll put 9, 3. So now our ROT2 password is ACJQQ-93. Well, great. That's really cool, except that, and since most sites require some kind of capital letter as well, we could say, okay, well, we'll always capitalize the second letter in the website. So Y or A capital C and then lowercase JQQ-93. And that seems pretty, and you could put more, you know, maybe more symbols in there if you wanted, or whatever you think would please. And I guess you would have to come up with a rule to buffer as well, because a lot of sites have rules about, well, they need to be at least eight characters. So you could say, okay, for any characters that I'm lacking at the end, I'll add an underscore or something like that. So you can make it sort of interestingly complex and dynamic in appearance, but then if you do it a couple of times, you'll realize that it actually is pretty predictable because it is predictable. I mean, it's pretty easy to figure out. So, or not super easy, but I mean, if someone really tries, they can reverse this, because this is really like grade school encryption, right? So Facebook, again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 letters, and then .com. So 9, 10, 11, 12. So that's 1, 2. And then I think we said the letter position of the second letter, so that is actually, again, a C, so that's a 3. And then there would be no buffer, because that's 8 characters or more, so we're good. So Facebook would simply be HC, capital C, EGDQQM, dash, 1, 2, 3. And while it might work, because that is certainly dynamic, I mean, someone who then compromises your Yahoo account and comes away with ACJQQ-93_, or I guess that underscore wouldn't be there because we were saying that if it was only 8 characters or less, right? Yeah. So, okay, so 93. Then if they take that pattern, and even if they figure out the rot part, then they might convert Facebook to rot2 and figure that out, but maybe they don't equate the 9 with, you know, what relationship does 9 have with the word Yahoo? We're not really sure. Where does the 3 come from? We're not really sure. But if they were to get lucky and get probably just 2 samples, they would probably be able to figure it out from that. So it's one of those things that is difficult to just kind of invent an algorithm such that you can reuse it frequently and successfully generate what are either truly random or truly unpredictable, I guess, maybe. I keep going back to unpredictable versus random, I guess, because that's, in my mind, a lot of the things that are generated are just unpredictable. And so I thought, well, how could we do that? What would be a cool way to do that? And I looked at a couple of different systems. There are a lot of systems online to come up with passwords, and there are some really stupid ones. There's a comic out there that rather confusingly just proclaims that if you use English words, then you are increasing entropy and you are making it more memorable. And I don't really see how choosing a set of random English words is going to help you remember for all the 45 different sites that you have accounts on. I don't really understand the logic of that. And it's an oft-quoted comic, and I never really understood how that was at all sensible. Like, okay, these are English words, but they're still, you know, to the user, they're completely random. There's no clue within the website itself on what to refer to. And I also saw some stuff about dice-generated passwords, which intrigued me at first, but once again, it's really just to ensure that you are being fairly random rather than just picking the name of your dog or your cat or whatever. There's no built-in way to sort of recover. There's no password recovery, I guess, is what I'm complaining about. And password recovery is difficult because if you want password recovery, if you want to be able to go to a site and think, what would my password for yahoo.com have been? I don't know why I'm choosing Yahoo of all things, but let's go with it. So what would my password have been for yahoo.com? Well, I have no idea because I randomly generated some string of words and numbers with some dice, and there's no way to remember what that would be. And sure, there are recovery methods built into most sites, so in that sense, maybe that is a great way to do it. If you don't remember the password, it's because you're not visiting the site frequently, and maybe that's maybe there's something to that. But I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a better way. And so I came up with a couple of different ways, and it's kind of funny because when you're trying to come up with these things as mental exercises, I think there's a tendency to assume that the more complex it is, the better. You think, well, if I come up with a really complex way of generating a password, then surely it will be more difficult to reverse engineer. But I mean, we just spent, I don't know, 6-7 minutes talking about the different ways we could carve up yahoo.com and facebook.com into unique strings with surprise values here and there, and yet the more we repeated it, the more obvious the algorithm became. And that's the problem. So I was thinking of different ways of alleviating that problem, and one way that I came up with was a word matrix. So I went out onto the internet and collected a bunch of word lists. Not a huge word list because I didn't need that many, but I gathered about 2,000 words, let's say, from wildlife, from D&D monsters and demons and Linux distributions, dinosaurs and so on. So it's arguably not the simplest word list you could ask for, So, I mean, in terms of word length and word complexity, so I'm not sure how great of a list it is, but it is a word list, nevertheless. And then I did a quick little bash script to select pseudo randomly from this word list an array of 27 words across and 27 words down, thereby generating a table of words. And across the top, I listed A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J through Z, and then a spare one. And then down the side, I listed A through Z, and then one spare. And my idea here was that, I'm going to open that up right now, actually, so I can refer to it. My idea here was that maybe using a big table like this would provide what to an outside observer would look like sort of some kind of geek project that maybe would be meaningless. A bunch of dinosaur names, some Linux distributions, some D&D monsters. Doesn't really seem that useful if someone comes across this table, for instance, on my hard drive or in an encrypted file on my hard drive, or maybe I printed it out and put it in my notebook or something. Who knows? Point is that it's a big word list and it doesn't necessarily mean anything. And you wouldn't have to have the header columns as well, because that does kind of, I guess, make it a little bit more apparent as to what it might mean. But the idea here is that the word list is completely, well, you know, pseudo completely randomly generated. So the words do not align with the letters in any way. And I thought, well, this could be a good sort of key for generating a couple of random strings. So for instance, if we did, if we looked for Yahoo, we could say, well, what we'll do is we'll take the first two letters in a site name, so Y and A, and that will be our first word in our password, or our first string in our password. And that is, according to my chart, this particularly randomly generated version of this chart, actually, because if you generate one, you will have a different chart. So according to mine, it's Mogonite. And then maybe we could say, okay, so that'll be our pattern. We'll take the intersection of the first two letters of any site, and then the intersection of its the final letter with itself. So in Yahoo's case, it would be O and O, which on my tables is Arrowhead. So there's Arrowhead. That's a common name for a butterfly, a specific kind of butterfly, I think. Or it could be something else, I don't know. So Mogonite and Arrowhead are the two strings that I have. And it would probably not be a horrible idea to come up with some numbers and some special symbols, because generally speaking, sites want those. And also a capitalization scheme, because sites generally want that as well. So to be a little bit different, what I'll do is I'll say that I'll capitalize the final letter of the first string and the first letter of the second string. So I've got sort of two capitals sort of in the middle there for no good reason. And I guess between the two letters, no, let's do that. So at the end of the, because a lot of sites want passwords to start with a letter, so that's, we'll do that. Special characters seem to be pretty contentious between some sites. Some sites are very particular about which special characters you are allowed to use. Other ones very, very nicely tell you to use anything you please. So we'll choose something very, very safe and standard for our schema here, and we'll do an underscore. And then to generate a number randomly, let's just say we'll take the first letter of the site and get the intersection of the first letter with itself. So we'll be on the Y row in the Y column is Enigmasaurus. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. And we'll just, yeah, that's 12. So we'll say our password then is Mogonite with a capital E, Arrowhead, underscore 12. And that's pretty difficult to reverse engineer if you don't have our table, have our exact table. And it's pretty difficult to reverse engineer, I would think, even if you did have the table, because you need to know the selection. And I have rather randomly declared that it's going to be the first two letters, the intersection of the first two letters, and then the intersection of the final letter, and then the letter count of the intersection of the first letter. So to me, it's easy to remember, but in terms of reverse engineering it, I feel like it's pretty difficult. So Moganite Arrowhead _12 is the Yahoo. Let's do Gmail, I guess, because that's the same number of letters as Yahoo. So we'll see how that goes. So the intersection of the first two letters would be G and M, which on my randomly generated thing is Mandriva. So I'll type that in, Mandriva, with a capital A at the end. And then we said that the intersection of the final letter with itself, so that's LL, is appendix. That's the word appendix. So capital A, and then appendix. And then we are going to do an underscore. And then we also take the word count of the intersection of the first letter with itself. So that is G, row, and column. And that is a Shinzosaurus. So that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. It's very coincidental that it is a dinosaur as well. So that's Mandriva appendix _14 with capital A's there in the middle at the place where the words are joined. And for the final example, let's do Facebook really quick. So again, FA, the intersection of FA in my list is Houdini with a capital I at the end. The intersection of K with itself is, let me get over to that column. I'm going to have to copy and paste this one because, yeah, I don't know that one. It's a Changiraptor. So capital C on that one, and then we'll do an underscore, and then we'll do an intersection of F and F, which is actually Susasaurus. Lots of dinosaurs. I guess I need to adjust some of the numbers in the word lists, I guess. But, I mean, this is also just unexpected. I mean, sometimes random favors, you know, random. You don't like to see the pattern in randomness, so if you do, you think it's not random. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, so that's a 12. So that's _12. Houdini, Changiosaurus, _12. So there you go, that's some fairly randomized stuff. Weaknesses of this system, obviously it has a table that, it has a key that technically could serve as the method by which this can be reverse engineered, right? So if you have this table, and you do need the table in order to reverse engineer it yourself, so you would, you know, you have to have copies of this table around. But the advantage here is that the table is rather meaningless on its own. It can be a word list without even, like I said, headings or a pattern of letters on the side, and it would be perfectly innocent word list. But if you know that the 26th column and the 8th row is what you're looking for this site name, and then the 8th row of the 8th column is what you need for that letter in the site name, and the 4th and the, or the 26th and the 26th for this one, then you're good to go. And that's, no one would know that, and it doesn't obviously have to be that pattern either. It could be some other pattern just as easily. You wouldn't have to use the first letter, the second letter intersection. Now again, let's look at what we have and try to reverse it. So if we look at the Facebook one, if we find Houdini on this list, then we can see that it is the intersection of F and A. So that's a pattern that we can recognize pretty quickly. Changiraptor, if we find that, we can see that that is the intersection of the K and the K. So that's reversible. Underscore 12, interestingly, is a lot more difficult to reverse engineer. And in fact, there's probably some good misleading, you know, you could probably find lots of reasons why it would be 12 if you looked hard enough without any knowledge of how we arrived at 12. Now, interestingly, the most difficult thing to reverse engineer in this equation, the underscore 12, is also the one that has already been repeated in three instances, because the Yahoo one got an underscore 12 as well. Gmail got an underscore 14, and then this one got an underscore 12. And that may be simply because in a word list, you're going to have lots of repetition and lots of approximations. Certainly if you're using a word list of Linux distros, for instance, then they're all going to be sort of a two-syllable word. If you're using a word list of dinosaurs, they're all going to be really long words, and so on. So that might be something to capitalize on, actually. So if we say, okay, well, this convention of taking an apparently random value in our word list and counting up the letters in it or something like that, maybe that's a good idea. We could maybe add another one in and say, okay, well, we'll take the intersection of that first letter again, or of the first two letters, and we'll count up the vowels in that word. So H-O-U, 1, 2, I, and I and I for Houdini. So that's four vowels. And we could stick that in somewhere. So Houdini, 4 Changuraptor, and Mandriva, how many vowels are in that? 1, 2, 3, 3 appendix, and Moggonite, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 again. So a little bit of repetition again, but pretty difficult for someone to just kind of figure out where those numbers are coming from, I think, given what is provided here. So that's an idea for password generation. As I say, the idea of just taking the first two letters is just completely, I just came up with that as I was recording this. You could just as easily do the intersection of the final two letters in a site name, or you could say that you're going to start with the exact middle letter, and if there is no middle letter, then you'll favor either the right or the left, depending on whatever you prefer. You'll take that exact one, and use that as the first string, and then you'll do some kind of calculation of letters or vowels or both, and put that in as the next value with some special character, and then you'll get the intersection of, I don't know, some other the first letter that you used as your basis, and the intersection with the final letter of the string, and use that as your final string. Something like that. And certainly you don't even have to use a word list. I just used a word list because I felt like that was going to be easy to generate. And it was, pretty much. I just went to a bunch of Wikipedia articles, dumped it into a text file with links, and then extracted a bunch of strings with awk, and that was it. Done. So that was pretty simple. But you could just as easily generate a bunch of randomized strings and numbers and dump them into columns, and then you'd have what would look to anyone like an MD5 sum, practically. Your password would be completely unrecognizable, but infinitely repeatable by you. And as long as you have the key to how you are going to use the matrix of words or strings or patterns, then it is private to you. The trick, I think, is to make your method something that is difficult to reproduce should the matrix be discoverable, and that would be kind of an interesting exercise. I would love to just have maybe a fake user on the internet who uses a standardized, you know, who does use a table, a key, that is publicly available. Like, the matrix could be publicly available, but the key to that matrix would be completely private to maybe one or two users, real life users. And that would be kind of interesting to see how well that performs against like a brute force attack. I mean, because at some, that would be the table would only be worth it, would only be valuable as a brute forcible thing. But then you would also have to extract metadata from that table if your private key used special characters that maybe were generated from something, you know, any word starting with A through J gets a dash, any word that starts with K through M gets an underscore, whatever, percent sign, a hash, whatever. And so you'd have to, or you know, the numbers that we are generating are derived from the number of consonants in this particular string and so on. So there would have to be metadata that a brute force attack, even against a public word list, would have to also utilize in order to then successfully brute force the thing. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, that's what a brute force attack is. So they could just throw random numbers and characters at a problem. And I'm sure it would eventually break. Would it break all the passwords generated by the table, though? I'm not so sure. So I don't know. If you have thoughts about password generation and private algorithms for websites, please post, or rather record a show, because this is a puzzle that I'm quite interested in lately. Just a sort of an analog way to provide yourself with the tools for a unique password for every site that you sign up for, or at least for every site that doesn't offer something like two-factor authentication or centralized authentication. You know, so maybe you would just be using it for the outliers that you can't sign in with your OpenID account or with your two-factor thing. So that would, you know, it could be just a subset of the sites that you go to, but it would be something that you could have, you could refer to, maybe you would even have to refer to, because, I mean, unless you went there all the time, you might have to refer to this site, or this table, rather, this matrix that you've got, and then keep that internal code of how to generate it based on that data. Other ideas are certainly welcome, though. I'm eager to hear if anyone has thoughts on this sort of thing and how you would come up with a unique password that you could generate as needed, but that would be difficult for others to figure out how to generate the same thing, even with the same data provided you. So thanks for listening. I will include all the word lists and the generator scripts in the show notes so that you can possibly emulate the same thing that I've done, just for kicks. Maybe you can modify it for yourself. Maybe you can actually use it in some way. Who knows? Heck, maybe I'll start to use it. So really quickly, I'll talk about, actually, I was going to end the episode, but now I realize that I should probably at least really quickly kind of go over the logic of the generator script, which it's not super hard, but it dumps everything into an org mode, into an org mode document. So it's for Emacs, and it's kind of a nice way to use pure text tables. It just has some nice little features that help you use tables in plain text. It's a lot better than, it's certainly more useful to me than a spreadsheet. And it's kind of nice. So the first thing that it does, the bash script, is that it checks to see if you've given it an argument. And if not, then it assigns the default destination to a file called matrix.org. Otherwise, it dumps it into a file of your naming. So if you execute this generate.sh script or whatever you call it, and you give it, you know, foo.org, then it will write all of the data into foo.org. If you give it nothing, then it'll dump all the data into matrix.org. It opens up your destination file by dumping an array of letters into letters and pipe symbols into a file, and that's the header. That's the column headers. The first one is empty, and then ABC through Z, and then a question mark at the very end. The question mark, I figured, would be necessary for sites that have weird characters in them, or that just have exceptions that you need some kind of I didn't account for that in my original plan, so I'll have to do something. Okay, and then it creates an array called vert, and that is A through Z with a question mark at the end. And then it cats all files that end with list, the word list, in the current directory into a temp file. And that's simply because I had a bunch of word lists in the current directory that I wanted to become one big word list. And it creates a variable, called big that is the number of the line count of this temporary file. So you've just created a big file with a bunch of words in it, and now it we're counting up the number of words, of lines in the file, assuming one word per line, and now we've got our maximum level of selection. So then we establish a variable called C for count equals zero, and we do a while loop. And this while loop is going to take care of all the horizontal rows, meaning that it will be the lines, you know, lines across the text file. So within that, we create a new variable called in, set that to zero, and then we create, we grab a value from our array as V. So the V value is used as the first column, the zeroth column, I might say. So we echo, or we actually print f that zeroth column into our file, into our destination file, whatever it's called, and then we start writing our random words onto the line after this initial zeroth column. And the way that we do that is yet another an embedded while loop. So while in, now which we set to zero, is less than 27, because we need 27 across, or 27 across, 27 more across. We grab a value of I using a built-in bash function called random. We're setting that from 1 plus random divided by, or the modulo of whatever the number of big was, and then we grab with awk the line number that we just grabbed, of the number that we just generated with our random function. So now we have a word, and if we don't have a word, because I had a blank cell once, so I threw in a quick hack if the word is empty, then we grab another word just in case. It hasn't happened since, so it might have just been a weird fluke, but just in case. So then we print f the word that we want and a pipe symbol, because that's what org mode uses for its table boundaries, into the destination file. And we're using printf here because echo kind of generally implies inline. We don't want that. We want to dump things into the line one after another. And then we increment in so that we're now on the next column. And we do that until we hit 27 columns. Then we're done. And then we echo a blank character, so that gives us a new line into the file. And then we increment c. And so now we're on the next line, or the next row, and that's it. We do that a bunch of times, 27 times 27, so like 729 times or whatever it is. And when we're finished, we have a matrix. So if you provide a word list, then some list of values, one value per line, then this script will take that list, will dump it into a file called temp, it will use that file as its source and generate an org mode table called, you know, matrix.org or whatever you called it. And then you can open that table and view it in org mode. When you first open it, you should know that it does take a little while to generate, depending on how fast your computer is or how slow your computer is. And when you first open it, the table may not look like a table. It might be scattered all over the place and kind of uneven, depending on what kind of, it'll actually look that way. So what you want to do, or at least what I do, is I do a fill, so Alt X or Meta X, and then fill dash paragraph, and that aligns everything perfectly into table form. So that's a quick quick org mode trick for you, or actually it's an Emacs trick. I don't know, there may be an org specific way to realign a table, I'm not sure, but the way that I do it is I just do the fill dash paragraph. And that's it. That's how you generate a big matrix of words in Emacs, or in Bash for Emacs org mode. So anyway, as I say, if you have other ideas, other cool password generation ideas, I'd love to hear them. So record an episode about it. And definitely, if you find my logic completely erroneous and I'm coming up with things that are super easy to reverse engineer, then that's great too. Tell me about it. Tell me about it on Hacker Public Radio, which is this show. You can record an episode and submit it. It will air. I will hear it. And boy, won't I be embarrassed. Oh, and I should probably thank Jay Lindsay, my friend Jay Lindsay from IRC, for planting this seed, the seed of this puzzle, into my head about 11 years ago. Thanks, Jay Lindsay. And thanks, everyone else, for listening. Talk to you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.